This piece was brought to you by the International Culinary Center, culinarycenter.com, heritageradionetwork.org.
Science and technology.
Refrigeration. We take it for granted, but its invention changed the course of history and the way Americans eat forever. On episode 157 of A Taste of the Past, Linda Palacio spoke with Jonathan Reese, professor of history at Colorado State University Pueblo, and author of Refrigeration Nation, A History of Ice, Appliances, and Enterprise in America. 70% of all of Americans' food is refrigerated at some point between farm and table. But what kind of methods did Americans use to preserve their food before the advent of the refrigerator?
There's salting, there's drying, there's potting. There's all sorts of very primitive methods. Pickling, for instance. Many of which we still use today for purposes of taste. What do you do in order to keep something cold? You use an icebox, and we use the term icebox and refrigerator interchangeably, but the original icebox is nothing but a box with ice in it. And then the ice keeps whatever food you want to keep cold, cold, and the iceman would show up at your door every day or maybe every other day and give you a new block of ice.
Jonathan Reese explained that in the 19th century, there was one kind of ice used for two separate purposes.
One is for, individual consumption, stick it in your glass, have a cold drink. And the other is to keep other foods cold. So you would put it in a railway car so that the beef slaughtered in Chicago can make it from Chicago to the East Coast, for instance. So it's both part of the infrastructure and it's a product to be consumed by itself.
Ice harvesting first began on the lakes of New England, but how did the ice industry begin?
I mean, I sort of started in the early 19th century when people cut ice off New England ponds and streams and uses it mostly to ship ice itself to the tropics so that people in the Caribbean or even people as far away as India can have cold drinks. And that's the real start of the industry. Nobody had quite figured out how to create cold where cold isn't there. At that point in time, just, using and sort of pinpointing where the cold is going to be using what nature provided was sort of the beginning of that industry. That got more efficient over the course of the 19th century, and everybody who was interested in refrigeration all over the world realized that mechanical refrigeration would be a wonderful thing. If we didn't need to rely on winter in the north, in order to have cold that we could utilize for our own purposes, then it would be both really useful for humanity and an absolute gold mine. But there are so many different ways to do mechanical refrigeration, and it's very difficult to make it practical. The first mechanical refrigerating machines weigh about 5 tons. They're actually used in large part to make ice as opposed to keep things cold. And that takes decades to perfect. So the ice industry, cutting stuff off ponds, persists longer than you would imagine because it's just simply much cheaper than somebody buying one of these great big machines.
So can we credit someone with the invention of the refrigerator?
Yeah, refrigerator is one of those machines that you can't credit anybody individually. There are scientists and inventors working all over the world. And they're working sort of in different directions sometimes. So the kinds of refrigeration that you see in England, for instance, is more than a little different than the kinds of refrigerators that get used in the United States. So the first people are working on this compression system, and they're creating these big 5-ton machines in the 19th century. The first ones pop up in the United States right around the Civil War years, and you have maybe a few hundred of them, mostly in large cities, around the United States right about the turn of the century. The personal mechanical refrigerating machine, the electric household refrigerator, really the first efficient one debuts around 1915, and it grows out of a whole different industrial tradition because the people who made the big 5-ton machines didn't think that they could mass produce what they did. So the people who are working on the household machines are the same people behind General Motors, for instance. Frigidaire is a division of General Electric. They use sort of a similar concept. It's called compression refrigeration. So both the 5-ton machines and the electric household refrigerators work on the compression refrigeration cycle, but they needed a different refrigerant. They needed a different business plan, and that really delays the outset of the home refrigerator, which is something else that everybody was working on inventing for 30 years before it finally hit.
The first refrigeration machines were very expensive, and therefore the first consumers were very wealthy. The majority of Americans did not have household electric refrigerators until World War II. Like the first models of many machines, the first refrigerators were extremely large. Linda Palacio explains why American refrigerators are historically bigger than their European counterparts.
So everyone gets these refrigerators, but then it's really not American wanting, oh, bigger is better. Yes, bigger is better in many ways for Americans. But, you know, it was all about the growth and the sprawl of populations in suburban areas. I mean, shopping, you know, they didn't have the markets. So supermarkets came along. You had to shop a little more efficiently, right, like once a week. So putting all your food in a big refrigerator, I guess, was the way to keep it.
Jonathan Rees explains how refrigeration affected seasonality and why cold storage was initially controversial.
People said, oh, no, cold storage food is going to be terrible, and it might be unhealthy, and cold storage is a way to manipulate the market because they can hold something like apples off the market and create these false scarcities, when really the people who investigated it saw what would happen is that they would hold some of the food off the market and they'll try to even out the cycle so that the price of an apple is about the same when it's in season and when it's out of season. And gradually Americans came to accept, actually it's a little more than gradually, World War I, when they were worried about food shortages, is about the time when Americans decided that maybe the slight taste sacrifice of a cold storage apple or a cold storage egg is worth it in order to be able to have it when they're not in season or when they're not in regular supply.
In order for certain foods to be transported long distances, they had to be frozen first. Rees explains this evolution.
Frozen food is really a whole different industry. We all know the primary person behind that is Clarence Birdseye, who invented the effective flash freezing technology in the late 1920s. And then there had to be a whole different infrastructure created to get frozen food into the supermarket. And that didn't really come in until after World War II.
While Rees is in no way opposed to refrigeration, he does make the case that food is always best when eaten close to its source.
You can make the case that people in New York City still don't know how good a California orange can be because when it gets there, it's not the same orange. I think a lot of people just sort of take refrigeration for granted and they assume that perishable food that they have in New York is going to be the same as they would have in California. But the closer you are to the point of production, there's no question the better it's going to taste. And it's not so much that I take a position on this, but what I want people who read the book to understand is that there is this infrastructure that most people have forgotten about so that they can appreciate, is the best word I can think of, all the effort and all the history that it's taken to get food from California to their table.
Jonathan Rees believes that Americans are willing to sacrifice taste for access. But how do we compare to other countries?
One of the themes of the book, one of the reasons it took me so long to write it, is three quarters of the way in, I realized I had to make some sort of effort at being comparative. And so it's also worth appreciating that a lot of other countries don't go shopping only once a week. That in France or Italy, the refrigerators are much smaller, and they're not as willing to make sacrifices for the sake of convenience. And that it's sort of the sub-theme of the book is that, you know, Americans are a little refrigeration crazy, and that's one of the things that make us unique.
To find out more about the history of refrigeration, tune in to episode 157 of A Taste of the Past on heritageradionetwork.org.
Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported nonprofit organization broadcasting over 30 live shows a week. To learn more and donate, visit our website or connect with us on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram for more. Song used in this piece is Love the Way by Alan Wilkes. Thanks for listening.